Boomer on.
We're there.
Yeah, and today's guest, we've got Dizzy Rascal.
Honoured, man. Honoured.
First of all, thanks for coming on the show, brother.
Yeah, like I told you, man, I'm a fan. It's crazy that I just, in the lockdown, I just come across your podcast. It's a podcast, isn't it?
Yeah.
Naturally, I watched the Nutty Redder from the guy who owns the football team from Essex.
Oh, Glenn Tamplin.
Yeah, yeah. And I watched the whole thing. I was like, rah, this is going to knock. Then I ended up getting into just watching enough of them. Darren G, I watched enough of them. Sick.
Yeah. Sick. Appreciate that, man. Yeah, it's great, man, to have people like yourself watching my stuff, man. Nah. It's unbelievable. Shows you how far I've come. Know what I mean?
Yo. Yeah, yeah, man.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I dropped you a message and you say, fuck's sake, brother, I watch your stuff, man.
Yeah, random. Yeah. Random. Like I said, it's fucking, yo. The energies or whatever.
Yeah. Real. Synchronicities, the law of attraction.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, man. And that goes for anybody watching. If you believe it enough, you will manifest that.
For real. So watch what you wish for, man.
Yeah, exactly, mate. Be careful what you wish for is a very true saying. So for a man who has nearly been in the industry for 20 years, 2003, your first album, Boy in the Corner.
Yeah.
Unbelievable album. Proper, you started the rap game in the UK, I believe.
That's crazy.
Phenomenal album, proper, especially when you've got the Americans who are killing it at that point. You had Eminem on top, and then the UK came through at 17 years old. And now, new album coming out, which we'll plug straight away.
Yes, sir.
This is nearly 20 E3 years later. Yeah, fucking plug it straight away.
Yeah.
So where can people get this album? iTunes?
Everything. We're putting it on record, tape. We're going back to the basics, man. We're like... Everything you can think of.
Amazing, because a lot of people are saying you're going back to your roots because it's kind of the same colouring, yellow, black, the album cover.
Yeah.
Is that true? You're going
That's like my superhero colours now, yeah, man. It's like, they know when it's black and yellow, it's going to be
hard.
It's
game time.
Yeah.
We'll touch on all that stuff.
Yes, sir.
Wait, I always go back to the start of my guest, brother.
Yeah, man.
Where you were born and how it all began. Yeah.
So I'm from Bow, East London. If anyone knows where that is, just basically, if you're coming from the south, it's right outside the Blackwall Tunnel, and in between Hackney and Newham, pretty much. I was raised there. I feel like I learned all my best lessons in life, or most of my best lessons in life there. Community, music, and that's where I learned music. Well, let me get into that then. So I learned music just by, say, around the early 90s, jungle, drum and bass was massive. So you just get guys that were bedroom DJs at the time. So I'll just hear it coming out of, I don't know, Gary Slater or someone on my estate. They'll be playing it, rinsing it. That was the thing then, innit? So then that's when I discovered pirate radio. So I'd listen to it, and I found random times like hardcore and jungle. Like, so that's when I got introduced to that. So then that just opened up my mind to something else, and just that's the first music I proper fell in love with. I randomly got into like heavy metal young as well. I think that was again through someone older on the estate playing it and being, and be like, wow, what's that? And then just got into it, and then moved on to grunge or whatever, and then eventually hip hop. But hip hop would have been through, again, a friend whose big brother gave him the second Snoop Dogg album. It was The Dog Father, and then he borrowed it to me. And these times it was on tape. That's the first rap album I heard solidly. And I had a friend who played me the Bone Thugs and Harmony album, and that rinsed that out. So like I said, yeah, all my lessons in life, all my music and all that I learned where I grew up.
From a very young age.
Yeah.
I think that's where the best albums come from. The people who's kind of lived it, who's kind of seen a lot of shit in their life as well. I think that's where people get a lot of the inspiration.
Mm.
If you look at guys like Tupac, Snoop Dogg, they've lived a lot of life of pain and quite dark times. And I think that's where, because a bit of poetry in there as well, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. I was definitely quite vivid and kind of think outside the box, especially we're talking that Boy in the Corner. And then there's all these mad sounds that I'd use and all that as well. So a lot of that came from, especially with that album, came from a guy who was my manager now anyway. He's been my manager since then anyway. But he had a studio and he'd produced as well over the years. So he just had a collection of all different keyboards, equipment, not plugins, units, whatever. and it's had all these mad sounds. So then me, Wiley, Roll Deep, all these, like, we all used the same shit. But then when I used it, I was just on some different shit. What's that? Find the dirtiest, maddest sound.
Yeah.
And use them and play different shit and put and whatever, spit on top of it. So that's why my album just sounded like some next shit. But I was influenced by everyone you both said as well. Yeah. So that's why I was influenced by drum and bass and garage MCs because they gave me the pride to sound like where I'm from, because UK rappers at the time kind of sounded like they wanted to be or was trying to be American, where garage and jungle MCs were still kind of more sounded like they were from down the road. Even though they'd have a bit of that Jamaican thing to them, they still sounded local. But then at the same time, I was influenced by Tupac, Snoop and all that, as far as being like being an album rapper, like wanting to make albums, a whole body of work.
What age did you start writing for? Boy in the Corner?
Oh, okay, Boy in the Corner. Some of them lyrics I had from radio. So I know you're saying the album came out like 2003, but I would have written some of them lyrics like from like 2001.
So a very young age to be.
Yeah.
That's a lyrical genius, man. That's proper shit.
Thank you, man.
Yeah.
Well, I learned to write bars. I learned to rap on drum and bass. So I actually had to slow down. So I learned, see how you came when you come met me downstairs, we were playing Jungle in the car.
Yeah.
I learned, that's the tempo I learned to write.
Yeah, the car was fucking shaking.
It was booming, yeah, man. And that was just for me driving down and think about other tunes and then, you know, you lead onto another tune, innit? And then, so drum and bass just influenced me so much, but I learned to write fast and then learned to slow down. But like I said, I was into the Vivid writers. I was into Tupac, Jay-Z, the people at the time that I realised were good storytellers.
Yeah, because that's where rap comes from and as American. It's definitely, nobody heard that in the UK, especially way back in kind of 2003, which was nearly 20 years ago. You opened the door for a lot of the guys now in this era too.
Definitely, yeah.
Do you get a lot of respect from that?
Yeah, I feel like I've been given my flowers, man. You can't have it all because like I said, it's like, it's how many years on? You've got people that are smashing it now. They're over 10 years younger than me. So, and they're the voice of their generation.
You're the most successful rapper in the UK.
I'm the most decorated.
Yeah, five number ones. You've got five albums at the top 10. You've
got every British award.
Yeah.
I think Tiny's got more number ones. I'll give him
Has
that.
Has he?
Yeah. Cheeky bastard, yeah. But he's got more number ones, but I've got more awards. I've got three gold albums, two platinum albums. I'm all right.
Yeah. How does that make you feel?
How does it make me feel? No, it's always good
because you live it, it doesn't really feel as big as people looking from the outside.
Exactly. I heard a thing about Arsene, I'm not to this extreme, but I see like Arsene Wenger, I heard that he never kept none of the trophies or nothing that in his house.
Yeah.
So he just kind of just got on with it. I'm not quite like that. My shit's up there above the telly, above that thing. But yeah, you don't always think about that stuff. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you're reminded, like I just got another award recently from Graham Daly. By the time this goes out, yeah, you'll be all right. But yeah, it's from Graham Daly. So you always appreciate it, especially later on.
Yeah.
But it's not why you do it. The biggest, the best thing, other than being able to take care of your family because of the music and that, is just people just feeling your shit. That's why you make it. Like,
of course.
Like from the beginning, we used to pay to go on pirate radio just to be heard. Like it was only £20, but £20 was something then, you know what I mean? £20 to go on there for the month. And you just wrote your bars and I made beats too. So to go in there and help, like cut them on dub or whatever, and then have DJs playing them and MCs MCing on it. Mm-hmm. That's the best thing. First time hearing your shit on radio and all that.
Yeah.
So that's kind of still about that now.
But you need the rawness, don't you? But you still need to move with the times.
Yeah.
But again, I still listen to Tupac near enough every day. Do you know what I mean? It's
on my Spotify, it's there. I've started listening to Tupac again. You know why? Because sometimes the classics are just the classics.
Yeah.
Like you try and listen to new shit, but it's okay to just still like our old shit. You know, and I've been telling myself recently, a good idea is just a good idea.
Exactly.
Like it doesn't matter in 100 years.
The good content stays forever.
It is where it is.
It fucking stays forever.
Because them man captured.
Yeah.
So especially Tupac, he captured some shit that is rare now.
Yeah. And I think a lot of rappers, American rappers, are terrible just now, if I'm honest. They ain't got the compared to back in the day when you had Dre, Tupac, Jay-Z.
But then it's a case
it's different,
of
no.
But no, we're not. See, we're at that age.
I think it's because we're getting older.
Do you know it's mad? Yeah. Did you ever think you'd be at that age where you'd be like, oh, like, how old are you?
36.
Oh, so you're a year older than me.
Yeah.
So we're exact same generation, but we're at that point now. It was better back then. But the youths now listening to their shit.
Think
I'm
it's
sure
great.
That they think that's the shit, innit?
Yeah, I get it.
I still think I listened to New because when I was making this album, I was trying to compare it. Like, I love my album, but there's just a sound quality in the shit that was coming out in the 90s and early 2000s again because they were using hardware. It weren't just all plugins or whatever else and all that. So I bought a bunch of keyboards and a bunch of shit now because I want a bit more natural sound. So my next shit will be a bit more like that. But there are differences. There are real differences, not just our old cunts.
I
get what you're saying, though.
Yeah.
I get it.
How was your schooling? Because I know you got the name Rascal from. That's part of your name, isn't it? Dizzy Rascal's from your schooling. Teachers used to call you Rascal.
Yeah. So looking back in hindsight, I was troublesome, but I think it was a case of whatever. Like, I guess. I'll say boredom. Because now I'm older, I think everybody is wired differently and everyone's learns differently. So see, when you're kids, you've got the school structure, the school system and their curriculum of how everyone is supposed to learn. And then around that, sometimes they might cater to people with a bit more special needs or sometimes kids who are just way too smart. You had some kids, they were geniuses and they had to bring a tutor in because they were so, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Then everyone else is kind of just has to kind of fit into whatever's happening, innit? Mm-hmm. I wasn't a kid that just fitted in easily. So sometimes I'd act up a lot. To the point where when I came to secondary school, I went to four schools. So, but what I did pick up from there, what I knew I always loved was music. So I actually looked forward to music so much that it got to a point that the last school I went to, I just went to music class. So I'd go to my music class before school. So 8 a.m, I'm in there, the teacher let me in, and it was like a back room where they had a computer because I'd already knew how to use Cubase or make beats from the school that I just got kicked out of. But now I had time to kind of really do it there. So I got to the point where before school, break time, lunchtime, and after school, I would just go into music to the point where I actually got kicked out of that school officially, but the music teacher niced me and they let me come to school but just come to and stay in the music class. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's what school ended up being.
Yeah,
like.
But I think trying to fit in the box, man, and sitting at a table 9 to 5, and it's not for everyone. I was shit at school. I dog school. I left school at 15.
But you're not thick.
Yeah.
And I said, even look.
But
late,
if you're a visionary,
on,
they try and make you feel as if follow the fucking rules. If you don't know your times table, if you don't know your certain words, then you are thick, but your grades should not define you as a person.
No, exactly. And then even though when I say you're not thick, like it's not even meant to be disrespectful to anyone because like, think there was a time when they couldn't even, when they didn't even diagnose dyslexia or shit like that. And I know that some guys that like are legends, actual legends that were dyslexic at a time when they didn't know weren't even diagnosed. So they were already treated a certain way.
As dumb?
Basically, but based on what they've done, it's not possible for them to be dumb after school. You know what I'm saying? But that system wasn't for them, not to even to put down the system because like every system, it was obviously designed at one point to kind of just get through people.
Yeah.
I guess it's training people from 9 to 5.
Yeah, I think Einstein says that I think everyone's a genius in their own rights if they believe something. And there's a man, Les Brown, who I was listening to a lot back in the day, was a motivational speaker, and he says, people's opinion of you doesn't have to be a reality.
Right.
Because a lot of teachers say, oh, you're dumb, you're this, you can't do this, you're going to have no career. But the most successful people in the world have.
But even that, isn't that's what is the teacher there for? Why would a teacher say that to a kid?
Mm-hmm.
That's not acceptable, man.
That's
not good enough.
Exactly.
Like, what are you doing? You're a grown adult. You're already out there in the world. You need to be telling a youth, there's something wrong with you, man.
There's 20 years later, you've got another album coming out. Nearly 20 years later, which I think is fucking phenomenal. I know you don't like talking about this subject, but it's a big part of your life.
Right.
And I want to ask you one thing from it.
Yeah.
When you look at guys like 50 Cent, The Game, 50 Cent was shot 9 times. Yeah. The Game was shot 5 times. You were stabbed 6 times, nearly died.
Right.
Do you think because you are centimetres away from death, that is why 20 years later you're still succeeding because you know how fast your life can get took away, and you know how life is short, because these guys are still succeeding also.
No, there's a bit of that. There's a bit of that. But to give myself credit, like even before that, if you think about that, I was like 16, 17 and in the studio till like 6 in the morning when, I was out and about, running around doing stuff I shouldn't have been doing as well, but not as much as I could have been. And as soon as I had the opportunity and a chance to really knuckle down and be in an environment, I was in there. So I think the drive's always been there. Yeah. Like,
but that just put things into perspective that, fuck this, I'm going to succeed even to this day. Is that a tough one?
I want to give it credit, like, but I don't know. I just think that...
You would have still succeeded anyway.
I have to give some... Yeah, I have to give some credit to my mum, because grew up single mum, raised me on an estate. But I always watched my mum work. She had a normal job that she did. And then she... Mum would do everything from be the Avon lady, Tupperware, selling toys for Christmas.
A grafter.
Yeah, and my mum used to go to, not too far from here, I'll go to Slough. There's a, like, industrial, what you call it, industrial fucking complex thing, whatever, where there's wholesalers. I used to go and get clothes and bring them back to the estate and take me around with her and go and sell them. And sell them on the estate. Then I picked it up. Then I start going there by myself, like from Bolt. Like, everyone knows it's quite a far distance to be doing at like 14, 15, whatever. So I always had drive. So it's like I said, it didn't, for me to be in the studio like that with Cage and all that and be there, like I said, until early hours of the morning, I'll be there. I'll get there with my mates sometimes, and then they'll go. I'll be there all the way through the night. And these times, it was in, the first one was in Deptford. Then it was like, then we moved to Bermondsey. Boy in the Corner was made in Bermondsey and Sheffield, randomly enough. part of it, So then, but when we was in Bermondsey, so in Cage, I'll be there in Bermondsey, and then he'll drop me back to Bow, go through the other house, and then go back to where he was going, and we'll go and do the same thing thereafter. So the drive's always, the stabbing thing probably made me like just look around me more and
question things,
question people, and like, you know what? And then even 2 years later, I actually, looking back on it now, that was a bit of a, that was a bit of some bitch boy shit went on.
Yeah,
like people that were older than me, that like, and you stay, and you can't say certain things to people and explain it without sounding like you're being bitter yourself, but it's actually some fuckeries. Like,
yeah, of course, and no matter, you'll still get this to this day, but that kind of stuff just makes you more aware. I believe that's...
Yeah,
you question everything, but the only thing is your trust issues goes, and I always say this, I don't fucking trust anyone, because the more successful I'm becoming, I'm realising the more sharks that are swimming around me want me to fuck up.
Nah, it gets like that, and it doesn't stop. And sometimes you have to just take your mind away from that and just like, I have to remind myself to just enjoy what I do, because at the end of the day, I actually got rich and famous off my hobby.
Yeah.
Like, for real.
Yeah.
So every now and then, I have to tell myself to breathe. Like, you're like a focused guy, innit? And you just want to... You don't want no chinks in your armor. You just don't want no L's. You just want to think forward all the time, innit? But then sometimes you have to remind yourself, like, rah, you already won. Like, from where you're from and what you've done, or, you know what I mean? Where you got yourself. Like, sometimes it's down to you. Everyone ain't always out to get you. Some people, you know what? One thing I'll never forget, Richard Russell said to me once. He said, we was in, in the thing, and I was going on about something, and he said, people tend to really care more mainly about themselves or what they think. Really, he's basically like telling me, get over yourself a bit.
Yeah.
There's a bit of that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But basically, I thought about it's true. Most people actually just care about what they've... Go and look at the comments on Twitter. When people leave comments and things on there, what are they doing? They want everyone to see what they think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's where it is, isn't it?
Yeah, I get it, man. And again, it's to focus on you, because I always say, where your focus goes, your energy flows. So I don't give it too much attention, but to be successful is a lonely journey as well. See, after your first album dropped, did you distance yourself from a lot of friends, or were you still with the same group?
I distanced, but you see, as a kid, you have different pockets of friends.
Yeah.
So because I was doing music, what tends to happen, which carried on for a while, is that you're around your friends who are around in the day. And at that, hey, who's around in the day? They're usually up to no good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you've got that circle of friends, and then eventually sometimes you end up falling out with them because whatever, they're just doing what they're doing, and their nature's kind of to fall out of each other anyway because of the type of shit they're doing. It's like drugs, and it's very snaky, isn't it? So just that fuck shit is just there anyway. And then guys not understanding that they can't come with you everywhere. So then you end up just becoming a target because people think you're doing all right, you're getting it, and you're not bringing them in and all that kind of stuff there. But it's like, well, you don't even do what I do. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Why do people feel as if you owe them something? Do you get that?
No, like, there's always been a bit of that. And that's even when I was helping, but I was always petitioning for guy, people. Do you know what the problem is? It's when you stop. It's not even so much they're not doing. It's when you stop. There's always going to be people that feel like you don't do nothing for them. But who the fuck, when have I ever done anything? Like, what are you on about? But then there's the people that you've always done things for, done stuff for. It's when you stop. That's when you see the problems. That's when problems start. Mm-hmm. So I've always thought like, the hardest rappers here, the ones the most hard, whoever thinks the most hard, sometimes they've got it the hardest. Because eventually, as gangsters, as whatever as they are, you got the looniest people around you, and you are gonna have to cut some of them loose. It's just it's just nature.
Yeah,
it's just the nature of you. As your thing gets better and as your life gets better, the music industry. Yeah, there's some dark parts of it.
Yeah, why do you think that is, like gangster? Why do you think it's rap as identified like gangster rap? Why does it get that reputation, do you think?
No, because it's just natural. Same way with grime or with garage or jungle or any of these things. Like you're coming from an underground settlement, You know?
Yeah.
No, you're just coming from an underground thing where who put on the rate? Okay, so pirate radio, my thing comes from pirate radio and raves. Who put on the raves and who built the stations?
Mm-hmm.
Like usually drug dealers. if we're being real, yeah, the whole thing is that most of our MCs are drug dealers or the DJs are drug dealers. Or it is where it is. Most of things are coming from council estates.
Yeah.
So council estate, like just like the schemes or whatever,
it's
poverty.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's working class, so that's not that's all that's going on there, because we know full well that's not.
Yeah.
I feel like most people are just trying to get on with it, innit? But there's more temptation to do bad. No, I don't even want to say that, because there's a lot of rich people doing some fuck shit as well. Let me get back to my point though, anyway. But the whole gangster thing around, I guess, urban music or whatever. It's just like,
it comes from the American side of things, like Tupac Biggie shootings and stuff.
Because gangster shit has been in the music industry, anywhere where there's money, man. Like, Frank Sinatra and that up to.
Yeah.
No one talks about that.
Yeah,
that
the mafia.
Come on,
yeah,
bro.
Yeah. It's like, proper.
Come on. Yeah. Like, they fucking... Gangster shit in the music industry, like they played a big part of that. They were the kind of beginning of a lot of that.
Yeah, the Vegas stuff.
It's always been that.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
because even Tupac, he was never a gangster. He was into arts, acting, poetry.
Yeah, but anyone who's even rapping, it's an art. So it doesn't matter how good you could be rapping in the booth with an AK.
Yeah.
But what you're doing
is
no different really to, like, even if you murder someone in the booth and you're rapping about it, it's still art.
Yeah.
Just like, just whatever, any storytelling, any kind of thing, it's there to be dished out and entertain, to move people. Like,
that's it.
And because look at the majority of people into gangster rap. They're not gangsters, are they? They couldn't possibly carry it if it was just down to gangsters.
Into
gangster rap.
Yeah.
Just the same as movies. If it was just down to, who reads crime or thrillers, like books.
Yeah.
And all of that. It's not just, you know what I mean? Like,
saying that, so, I know a few people who's watched Scarface and they think they're a fucking gangster.
Scarface. You know this thing, Scarface was mad to me. Scarface, because I watched it later on in life. So,
oh, did you?
Yeah, I was old enough to say, I don't understand what the bit, like, he's an idiot. He fucked up everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
killed?
His mum hated him. He got his sister fucked. He got his best mate fucked. And his missus hated him.
Mm-hmm.
And then everyone come to shoot him. And the one bit that everyone holds on to is like, yeah, but he went out like a G. That's it. It's like, oh, man, cool.
Yeah. But you tend to see drugs do that to people. Fucks their mind. They feel untouchable. Been there myself. So when you started after the first album, how did you deal with the fame? Boy from the streets, changing his life, becoming successful at a very young age. How did you deal with that? Because you seem very level-headed, even with your interviews.
Mm.
You don't fuck about. You speak the way you want. Your words will never get twisted. So how did you learn to be quite level-headed? How did you deal with the fame at the start?
I think some of it, because I did get to watch Pay As You Go, Maxwell, So Solid to an extent, and More Fire Crew. I remember I came directly after, but I was around, especially, like I said, More Fire Crew, Pay As You Go. So I watched what happened. I watched guys try to extort guys. like on all of the like the dark shit. I saw it for myself. So I learned how to just, okay, be low key. That's what you have to do. Don't flash. And a lot of it was people they knew that were onto them, as well as just whatever citywide or nationwide, you go to a place, whoever's the guys there, they're trying to make themselves known. We're all used to that, innit? That's normal. You go to a place, guys want to make themselves known, they have become friends, or they're onto you. It is what it is. But I just learn to just, I try not to attract too much attention to me early. Mm-hmm. To the extent where it's, you know, it's mad. You see my first video, I Love You. I didn't want to be in the video. I was so, because like I said, on Pirate Radio, people didn't even know what we looked like. And then we do these raves and the tape packs went around. Even with the Pirate Radio, it was tapes that traveled across the city, then traveled mm-hmm. across the country. But our faces weren't known. So I was used to that and I liked it.
Yeah,
that means I wasn't getting stopped everywhere or whatever. But later on, it's time to be in videos. I didn't want to do it. But overall, I just laid low and I just always tried to just, don't say too much or just try to attract unnecessary attention.
Yeah, I think that's the best way to try and, a private life's the best life, I believe. I think that's where a lot of people fail because they chase the fame, the attention, they feel as if...
Because they don't know what it is.
Yeah, it's bullshit, man.
Yeah, a majority of it
yeah.
is like a lot of unnecessary stuff. And then this whole thing about you and people expecting you to be a role model. But I don't know, but they're not there. When I was younger, the type of attention I'd attract was like, you just be like in a situation, like you'll be able to mind your own business and get into a situation, mm-hmm. like gets dangerous just because, but you're expected to just still be like a role model.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that's, like I said, that's what happened with a lot of people before me, like, because there's still that attack. Even if you're moving on the right path, there's still that element of whatever the streets or whatever, a bunch of people that are not looking at you like that, or they're just looking at you as food, or like, so you constantly have to deal with that too whilst being in the public eye. So when all that did happen to me and I did blow up around the first time around, like, yeah, it was a bit mad because at the same, I was kind of the blueprint as well, because I only one that kind of out of those groups that I named that kept going as a solo artist onto the next album and onto the next album, onto the next. There was nothing before me for me to look to for guidance as far as moving forward.
Do you feel as if a lot of pressure comes on you then because you became the blueprint that, because if a lot of people are watching you for inspiration and you fuck up, then it can put out someone else's lighter. Do you know what I mean? It's like you were the front runner from such a, to produce album after album after album. There's a lot more pressure come on your shoulders then to release the second album, the third album.
I think that was my own pressure. Seeing, even like when you're saying about, after I got stabbed, I came back from Napa. I went to the studio. Like, I was still like, I'd had the stitches taken out and I was skinny. I weren't in a great state. Went back to the estate, yeah, see everyone. Like, they thought I was dead. Like, I just, whatever, chatting to everyone. But then I got back into the mold. I think, you know, I've just got an obsession with the music side. So all that extra stuff that you're talking about, all those outside elements of all the pressure of all that, there's that in there as well. But the main pressure, was just that I just wanted to be the fucking guy. When it came to like, just wrapped it, I went to make the best shit, have it out, and have the biggest shit out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that's what really drove me.
Yeah, so that's when you feel most alive, when you're in the booth or writing music.
I fucking hate recording.
Do you?
I'm not gonna lie. Like, it's actually quite, if you're doing it for it's quite tiring. Yeah. Like, I'm a dude that when I'm disciplined, it's like, I didn't like that take. I have to do it again.
Yeah.
Like, otherwise I'll be angry with myself when because it's, you see, like, once you're in the vibe, you have to catch it.
Yeah.
And that's what people like Tupac were good at. Like, when you hear and you hear the vibe, you hear that they caught a moment.
Yeah.
So that, but doing that sometimes you haven't got the energy, you haven't got, like, your energies ain't there.
Yeah,
so
it just feels hard. Right.
Yeah, I feel better making a beat. Mm-hmm. And then there's times, like, for years, I weren't inspired. I stopped making beats after my third album. Up until 2017 is when I started making beats again. Mm-hmm. So for a whole, bunch of years, I just didn't.
But do you feel as if that's good though, to re-energize and get away from it all and just enjoy your life as well? Because I'm a workhorse. I'm scared to take a step back in case I lose it all. So I kind of need to keep, like, the first few years, I think, is a non-stop hustle. I just feel as if I don't want to stop because there's always somebody working, try to work harder, but I don't believe anybody's working harder than me. Do you feel as if that break, though, re-energized you to go, well, fuck it, it's game time again?
Well, I was fucking around in Miami and Caribbean and
Texas
and all that. And like, which I'd been, it's crazy because I went to America like in 2003 the first time and would go over there to tour and do all my promo and all that. And have some fun, but not like when I went there in 2009 up until whenever,
when you went 2007, fuck
whatever, I was like, just enjoying myself, still making music and that. But so I understand about, sometimes just having a breather and that, and just enjoying and just doing things for yourself. I was out there by myself and so made a whole new bunch of friends, got a whole nother life out there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But then, you do want to come back, you get back to the grind, like, see what's important. Things have changed. The game's bigger than it's ever been. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Whole bunch of new rappers, whole bunch of new next generation, new sounds. And it's like, oh shit, okay. And that's where, see, I was saying earlier on about what you've done in the past is cool, legendary, been given your flowers, but it's not enough fuel to drive me and keep me cool today.
Yeah.
It's just done. It's cool if you put something out, smash it today, then you can add it to all of that.
Yeah.
But until this, now, I need to grind, you know what I mean?
But people make one album and they think they fucking made it and then you don't hear from it ever again, or one single.
That happens, yeah.
You're seven albums deep, man.
But you know what I learned as well? I learned that it's actually okay. One year, I think I was in Serbia. I'm sure it was Serbia, somewhere like that. When that part of Europe just kind of just started opening up to festivals, and now it's the thing. You got Outlook Festival, Croatia, I've like, that's a thing now. Mm-hmm. But we're going there just as they kind of opened it up, and it was like, and I was at a festival, and there's like a Indian guy come up to me, and he goes, "Dizzy, what's good? What's good? What's good?" He had dreadlocks. I'm like, "Oh, what's happening, man?" He's like, "Oh, yo, it's me, man." So it's like, he said, "Yeah, bro, yeah. It's Apache Indian." I was like, "Apache Indian?" I was like, "Oh, fucking Apache Indian. Why in your body? Remember that back in the day?
Yeah, yeah.
I remember when I was a kid, Boom Shakalak, massive on the telly, you know what I mean? Like, and I was like, "Rah." And like, he was there, like, he was like, he was a Rastafarian now, he had a whole roots band, like, I said cool and all that, and kind of had a nice chat, left it at that. And I thought about it, it's like, rah, that guy's got one song that I know of. He might have had some others, I don't know, but he had one song and he's still traveling. We're in Serbia. It's not like we're in England or here, we're in Serbia. Yeah. So that means he's traveling the world, have at least, I don't know how many years, but at least 15 or something years later, probably. So it's like, okay, you can live off, actually, you can actually live off one tune.
Yeah.
Like, you can, he seemed all right. You know what I mean? So every time I put too much pressure on myself, sometimes I remember that. It's all right.
Yeah.
You're good.
Even if you didn't release any albums, you could still travel the world and sing your songs.
Do what you
because
do.
The Tongue in Cheek album,
right,
was a fucking monster.
Went mad.
Monster.
Yeah, man. Went mad. And that was like, really was the biggest, I took a chance. There's a big gamble.
You kind of changed up the sound and the mixing and everything was different, but why do you think people related to the? It's a bit because it was bonkers. It was fucking kind of, but it's genius as well.
You know what? I want to sit here and say, it's cause of that. But you know, the God honest truth is, I don't really know the answer. I just know if I base it off what I see it do to people when I'm at a show, and how people jump up and react. Only they could tell me. But I just know what their actions are telling me. They are just jumping up, going mad, and they're just letting loose all inhibitions. They know all the words and they go off. I guess it's an event. Each one of those songs is like, whatever, Dance With Me, Holiday, Bonkers, especially those three, they're like an event. It is like kind of euphoric. And it's a bring everyone together, they bring everyone together songs. But it wasn't like I was making, like, oh, I need to go pop now. It weren't really like that. The first one that came was Dance With Me. So that came off the back of, I just said I had three gold albums. So I was signed to XL Recordings, which were, they're an indie label, but they're a huge one. Probably the biggest in the UK is them and Domino, I think. But I think XL might be bigger. So I was done. And so it's about the re-up. It's because I'd done my three albums, about the re-up. what happened was, whilst making that last album, I saw Calvin Harris song on the TV. It was acceptable in the '80s. And for whatever anyone thinks about what Calvin Harris has done in the last few years, yeah, which is fucking huge anyway, but it's like some people, it's really mainstream, innit? It become the mainstream. Except when the '80s, nothing sounded like that on the radio, on the TV or the radio at that time. It was perky, you had those synths. It was almost like some '80s music, like it was really quirky. And I was like, rah, what, yo, who's that? What's that? And I was like, rah, I'd be sick if I could get an MC on one of his beats, like on a beat like that. Oh, would be, that'd be good. And I thought about it and kind of just had it in the back of my mind. Then he made another song with the Mitchell Brothers. They, at the time, they were called the Mitchell Brothers, where some from Forest Gate. And when I saw that, it wasn't a massive tune, but it had rappers on it. And that's when I said, yeah, like, you can rap on these songs. So I met him at Radio One big weekend. And I said, I approached him like, yo, like, I love, like, you're sick. I love what you're doing. It would have went something like that. I don't know exactly what I said, but like, yeah, like basically let's work. Let's do something. It'd be cool, innit? So then, I don't know, think sent a few ideas. I can't remember what happened. But I ended up writing those lyrics on Dancing Me to another beat that I got sent by another dance group. Or I can't remember it was. Groove Armada, I think. And then my managers heard it. It was like, yo, it's good. They think these lyrics will go better on something else. That's when I got Calvin to send me something. Mm-hmm. Sent me that beat. Practiced the words on them. That to go and re-record them. Got the singer in, blah, blah, blah. All the rest is history. And all that. But that was... how I went, that got into, that's what started that album.
But it's a game changer as well, isn't it? But again, it's fucking scary to take risks.
Yeah, and it's not like, I think I tried to make a pop attempt before on my second album. I got a song called Stand Up Tall, but it was still coming from an underground
vibe.
Yeah, because if you listen to Stand Up Tall, the drums are actually, if anyone knows a tune called Pulse X, it goes bong, ch, bong, bong. Mm-hmm. It was big on the underground. All the MCs used to MC on it. Some people will say that like that kind of birthed grime. There's kind of the 8-bar switch, right? But so that was a big tune, yeah? But for the record, I birthed grime. Cool. Yeah, but Stand Up Tall was like a pop version of that, but was made by the guy who made... Pulse X. So I guess that was the first time I tried to make like a poppy kind of tune, and it did well. I'm sure it was like number 10 in the charts, and that was good for me at that time. I was only on my second album, like I said. But then fast forward to Dancing Me, and then Bonkers just came randomly. I didn't ask for that. I was in Denver, so I was doing like an American tour, and I was in Denver in a hotel. I was in the hotel because we could come back, and the show had actually been cancelled for whatever reason. And I got sent it, listened to it, and it had the Bonkers on it. And I remember thinking, oh, right, this sounds like the music I hated when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. I didn't like house music or that poppy house shit that you used to see on the telly, like on top of the pops and all that. Yeah. Sean Corrin for what? Yeah. That's what I used to think. You know what I mean? I didn't like that. Uh-huh. But... by this time, it's like 2008, 2009, something like that, late 2008. And I'd been to Ibiza. By now, I'd been to Ibiza now, partied, enjoyed, understood.
The music.
Okay. Uh-huh. I'd never been in a setting before to get it and understand it. So that's how I was able to write Bonkers, like not even writing.
That
down.
Still gets played everywhere, crazy. Even to this day, mate. Yo, fucking nuts.
Man, did it at the Olympics.
Yeah. So see, when you were writing that, I mean, then... it's all done, produced. Do you listen to it and go, this is going to be a fucking banger?
Nah.
Was there any sort of nah?
I wrote it. I didn't even write it down. I just remembered it because it's that easy. And came back to England, recorded it, and then didn't think anything. Didn't even think about it again. Because I didn't think it was that good.
That's mad, isn't it?
Because it was too far from what I was doing, I guess. Maybe I even had to think
where
about
you started.
Too, yeah, like that kind of, I'm not sure about that. I just knew it banged. I was like, not something I would have tried to make. It's just I knew who Armin van Helden was because again, like
in Ibiza.
But even before that, he had the tune. What's it called? Gotta Be. What's the big tune he had? Gotta Be. You don't even know me. And because that used to be on the box every fucking day. Remember the box, the music channel.
Yeah, yeah.
So I remember the video and it's like, oh shit, that's Armin van Helden. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll do a song with him. Went to like a few months later. Yeah, a few months later, my manager said like, you're gonna want that on your album, yeah? I said, what, you think? He said, yeah, like, you're gonna mm-hmm. want that. I'm like, all right, cool. It wasn't until I was doing a UK tour and I just played it. I'm sure, I played that, was it Dance With Me? I played it. Yeah, I played Bonkers at the end, just at the end of my show, just to like, here's another tune you've got. Yeah, like, we see mm-hmm. what you're saying.
So you weren't feeling it at all?
No, in fact, I'd already had, Dance With Me had already mm-hmm. been number one. Yeah. So we was in Liverpool, we played it, and it went mad. And I'd never seen a song that of mine being played to a crowd for the first time and then be like the climax of the whole night.
The response.
And I was like, oh shit.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's like, we knew that, okay. And yeah, it was number one.
That's phenomenal. Fucking great tune. Great tune. Crazy. How do you feel? How's Calvin Harris? Good Scottish man.
Fucking hell. So we're talking about, yeah, I was just going out having fun fucking about in America. So I'd go and see him. So I'll go to LA. He's living in Bel Air. Go to the house. All right. This is how you're moving. Mm-hmm. I like it. And he's got the Dreams studio set up that he built himself. Like, you go there, he comes down in the golf buggy, the golf cart thing, whatever, takes you out there. Ah, oh, man. And then you jam him in for a bit. And then, yeah, the Vegas residency. So then, it's like, let's go Vegas. I want to come with y'all. Like, go there, drive to, I can't remember what airport it was. It's the one just that, is it Van Nuys? I can't remember. We just go there, get on his jet. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it was his jet. Get on the jet, fly to Vegas, go for the hotel, the different entrance. He's got the different room. Oh, you need to spend a million. You need to be betting a million to get even anywhere near this mm-hmm. thing. And I don't gamble, so I don't know that side of it. But I knew it was where the big boys play. Went backstage, just saw what he was doing, looking around like, fuck, this is like, and just understanding the money. And just all the moves that was being made around this whole thing. Because really, what are they doing? They just EDM just caught on to them in America and they just managed to fucking just give shitloads of money to DJs to sell way overpriced mm-hmm. tables to whatever oligarchs and whoever else, like, who don't even really give a shit. They just want to go out or whatever because they can, innit? And then, and then we'll just get the jet back. So we just like literally go up about 35 minutes on the jet mm-hmm. to work, do the thing, hour and a half, 2 hours, and come back. That's how he's living.
Like, fucking fair play. Yeah, he's a superstar. Crazy. He's a superstar.
Nah, crazy.
For where he's came from to what he's succeeding now is unbelievable. But I think that's also good business for you. It's good strategies. Everything's levels. Mm. So for you to go, right, I'm going to get him, guys like Robbie Williams as well, working with these kind of people just enhances your shit as well. And to put it together and create bangers as well shows that the talent and the craft and the visualization fact to take risks is great.
Yeah, and also sometimes I just want to see what I can get away with, innit? There's a bit. I want to just take all of that praise and like, yeah, he's right. I'm a fucking genius. But then sometimes, it's just that like, what can I get away with? Yeah. And that's why I've done some things where people are like, what the fuck is he doing? Like,
push the boundaries. Push the fucking boundaries.
But then sometimes it ain't even always about the music. Sometimes it's about where the music takes you. Because like you said with Robbie Williams, okay, then. He actually wanted me on Rudebox years before that, and I wasn't ready.
But why?
I just, at that time, I wasn't ready to be on Rudebox. I heard it, and I wasn't ready. I weren't ready. But then we did our tune, and then mm-hmm. we actually went to... He wasn't supposed to be on the tune, actually. I had that... I recorded that song in LA, and Example was supposed to do it. And then he couldn't sing it at the time. I can't remember why he couldn't sing it. So we had no one to sing it. And then somewhere out of the blue, man said something about, Robbie Williams is around. I said, Robbie Williams? Like, yeah. Like, that's mad. Like, Robbie Williams on the train, that'll be mad. So then I went to his house. And at the time, he was living in one of his fucking four or five mansions. Yeah. But this house he was in, I think it was Ringo Starr's old house. And Paris Hilton and Slash were his neighbours. I remember that. I remember, just being in the yard. He had his own studio. He showed me a bunch of cars, showed me a bunch of stuff. we talked about Tupac and hip hop because he's a massive Tupac man. Yeah. And I saw the photo with him and Tupac at a Versace party. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh shit, like you partied with Tupac, like shit like that. Yeah, like shit. if you ever get Robbie Williams,
yeah, he's gonna come on. He's a big fan of the podcast.
Yeah, no, I can imagine that. I can imagine that. Yeah, it'll tell you anything about rap music. Trust me, he knows his shit.
Because he's
a brother from the ends, really, isn't it?
Yeah, he's a fucking megastar, absolute megastar.
He is, yeah, but he's still like as big as he is. He's from normal boy from a castle.
Yeah, of course, man. He's had his problems as well. He's changed them, and he's very big into conspiracies, aliens, and fucking.
He told me that Take That did a massive concert here. I don't know if it was Nebworth or somewhere mad where it was huge, yeah. And he said the vibe was so mad, so big. He looked up. He said aliens were above the light, like, flying saucers.
Yeah.
He told me that.
Was he taking drugs at the time?
He wasn't taking drugs at the time. He told me about. I don't know if I'm supposed to say. He definitely told me that he definitely spent a few months in the back of his garden, like, eat up or whatever the fuck. He's done a lot of mad things. And he told me that there was a ghost in his ass as well. And he asked Ringo about it. He said, oh, yeah, it's there. It comes in every now and then. He told me a bunch of mad shit. He told me a bunch of mad. Mm-hmm. But going back to my point, was that I got to see how someone who, that it's not like, Take That wasn't the biggest thing when I was growing up. I got to see that someone in a similar position to mine as well, someone who got big young, obviously went to crazy heights, but big young, what it looks like at the heights to the point where he's living amongst big American superstars, and like it's huge, fucking gets $1 million for a wedding song, sing, like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Shit like that. So that was almost as important as music. I got to see that, so I got to get more background. Like I said, there was no blueprint for me coming up as a successful rapper, no one else for me to look at, no stars for me to look at. There was no one like me. So being introduced to that kind of life and seeing that, even though I'd had a bunch of number ones by then anyway, but it was nice to see that, okay, someone who's been huge, him telling me about some of the pitfalls he's been through and like some of the stuff he's seen and all the crazy shit and all that. It's like, rah, fucking hell. So, okay, that's available too if you want it. You might want to steer away from some of it, but this is a guy that's seen it all, has been super honest with you. Mm-hmm. Like, the music took me there. That might have stopped me doing some shit that might have destroyed me today.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And God willing, he's still blessed. He's super blessed.
Yeah.
Fucking look, what's his biggest problem? He's fucking arguing with Jimmy Page or some shit about that, about building the fucking thing across Holland Park in one of his other fucking mansions. It's blessed. Like.
Yeah, he seems a right good guy because you've rubbed shoulders with superstars like Pharrell Williams. What's he like?
Pharrell, oh my God. He's one of them dudes I always bumped into over the years. Like, he'd be one of the first Americans to like bring me out on stage, like in like 2005 or whatever. He was doing it from then. Did it in England. Did it in Denmark.
He's like fucking Benjamin Button, man. He ain't got any older.
Definitely, but he's definitely done some bullshit as well. Sometimes, we was in Miami once. I see him out somewhere, and he said, "Yeah, yo, look, I was getting in the studio." So we got in the studio, and there's an artist called Yuna. Who's huge, a Malaysian artist. I remember, he was not big deal, but it's that one of like, what did he say? We was in there, said, yo, I'm like, nah, so I'm thinking of Will.i.am. A situation happened with Will.i.am. Will.i.am was in the studio with him. He was producing the tune. We did a tune together. No, he didn't produce a tune. I'm all over the place, bro.
That's okay.
I'm
what was
tired. Yeah. What happened with Will.i.am? We made a tune. I made a tune. I went into vocal it. So I went studio and he was there dancing around the tune, going, he's a bit wacky and that. Then he gave me this whole speech about, I'm not one of them producers that likes to, I like to be there when it's being done. I like to be there. So then, all right, cool. So I like recorded the thing, got down to what I was doing, came out, it fucked off. That's why I got muddled off because the first time that happened to me was for real.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the studio, said, yeah, do this. Ah, yo, it's dope. Cool, just do this bit. I've come out, and Pharrell's fucked off. No one to be seen. and I'm not allowed to take the music. That whammed me up.
Yeah.
All that time
Where the fuck did it go?
What's that we say?
Where did it go?
I don't know. But just to bring more context to it, I remember I was doing a TV show called Must Be the Music with Jamie Cullum. And I told him about it, and then he started telling me about a story. He was in the studio for real. and they were recording something and they were watching basketball. And the same thing, he's doing his thing. And then Pharrell said, hey, yo, I'm gonna be back in a minute, man. Like, just keep doing what you're doing, it's dope, whatever. Like, he said, yeah, cool. So he was there. And it's like, it'd been a little while, and James was like, yo, I wonder where Pharrell is. Where is he? Hello, where's Pharrell? Right, he'll be back. And I think he said it was a little while, and then he looked up on the telly, and Pharrell was there at the game. And just kind of left him there, shit like that, yeah.
There's phenomenal names, though. To be working with these kind of people is unbelievable as well.
Yeah. I mean, but you know, I'm not going to lie. There's been other people that has been like, maybe not as big, but like better experiences as far as making music.
Yeah. 2010, you won a Brit Award.
Yeah.
Best Male. Phenomenal award.
That was crazy.
Up against two Scotsmen as well. Paolo Nutini and Calvin Harris. But I think Robbie Williams as well.
Yeah, but you know what? It was more of... You know, it meant more because I'd been nominated a couple times, but it was like for the urban or those kind of categories.
Yeah, for your first few albums.
Yeah, but it's the fact that it was those categories, urban category. But this one was just like best British male.
It's the biggest.
Yeah, so that was like raw. And like I said, it was a time where I was independent. So
you didn't get signed after your first three albums? Like you didn't?
Nah, I don't think I mentioned that in the story. That was the point. So when Dance With Me... I should have said that, I was waffling on. But basically, they didn't want Dance With Me because they I don't think they was feeling the direction. And they weren't giving me the money that I wanted. I felt like I wanted more money, naturally, whatever, innit? I'd earned it. So we ended up putting out Dance With Me independently, just like before I got a record deal with them in the first place. Yeah. We used to basically press up white labels, press up records and take them to the record shop. So I thought it would be like, going back to how it was when I was 17. Mm-hmm. So when I did go number one, whatever, that album, I was a proper independent artist. I wasn't signed to anyone.
It worked in your favour then?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's a fuck you kind of thing, innit?
Nah, it's just more money kind of thing, innit? Yeah, basically.
How was it? Did you feel as if when you won your Brit, though, your rewards don't make you as a person, but to win the best male against some superstars, did you feel as if that was you properly arrived on music scene, or do you feel as if you'd already achieved a lot before that?
No, I definitely felt like I'd achieved a lot. It was just the way it happened.
Did you expect that?
I weren't sure because I'd been there a few times and not won. I'd been nominated, a few times and not won. But to win it like that after a string of number ones, these times I had four number ones on the album. I'd had five number ones, but four of them was on the album. And then I did that big performance with Florence. No, I hadn't had four number ones yet because that song that I did with Florence ended up going to number two. I'd had four number ones.
Yeah.
It was four number ones because that came after. Uh-huh. But I didn't expect to win it because the way the Brits is, it's all the majors, isn't it?
Yeah.
Basically, so it feels like one of them things where they kind of dish it out to each other. So I wasn't expecting me just as an artist with not signed to any of them, with no, just on my own label. Mm-hmm. To be getting the biggest Brit. Well, the biggest Brit.
They can win the biggest category. Like, yeah, best male.
After having all that success, so that it was kind of mad. So I went back. But after I won it, yeah, it was like, it's amazing. Because then we got the Mercury, the Ivan Novello, Brit Award. Like, those are the three, like, kind of, you could say most important British awards.
Mm-hmm. So what was it like then taking your break for a few years? Why did you make that decision?
What was that about? So the next album was the fifth. That was the only one where I had Robbie Williams on it.
Yeah.
That came out, what, in 2013? I think I just went to America. It's the first time I went to America to make an album as well. Mm-hmm. So there was that, was hopping around. And I'd just done so much work back to back, so I think I just was kind of enjoying myself in between. Then I put out an EP, and I put out another album. But again, I was serious about it, but I wasn't here a lot. And I was just kind of finding my, wondering even if I even wanted to come back and live in England. It's the first time when I thought about living somewhere else.
Why?
Like fully.
A lot of fame and attention.
yeah, I'd been through so much, like psychologically, like I said, all those things I had to deal with from young. And then I got famous, because I feel like I was popular at the beginning, but then like after winning the Brit Awards and all that, like you're famous, the old lady in the bank knows who you are. Like you can't identify who's going to recognize you, innit? And it's mainly love by then, it can be a bit overwhelming.
Yeah.
So at the end of 2009, I went on holiday, I ended up going to Miami because I couldn't go to Antigua. And I remember just walking to the beach every day and just feeling free. And I think that's what kept me over there. And I was supposed to go for 2 weeks, I ended up staying for a few months and then just kept going back all year, then bought a place. So, and then from there, I got friends that will come and see me from Houston, and then they'll go Houston, like Bun B and all that. I'll go Houston, go back and forth. Then I started going to New York again, but I never used to go to New York on my own. I used to go to New York and LA just for work. So I'll go with the label, manager, all this thing, do promo and have a bit of free time out there. And then I started going to all these places by myself, making new friends, then going to Vegas, then going to Grand Cayman, and going to Jamaica, and going to all these places on my own and just enjoying them differently. And the other thing, growing up, yeah, I weren't a raver. So I'd still get to go West End and all that, but I didn't enjoy it. Like, not really. I enjoyed some of it, whatever. But and we'd go on tour, do bits and bobs and all that, but it wasn't, I didn't feel free. We still had to keep look about what's happening and all that. Like, if I'm in England, any part of it, you still have to just keep looking about, innit? When I went Ibiza, that's when I started enjoying, like, that different kind of partying, house music, and like, everyone's different, and the vibe's different, like, okay, like, it's nice. And when I started going to America and all that, that's when I started going to, like, the type of, okay, this was the time everyone's like, turn up. It was like, turning up and all that. Starting doing all the shit that I see in the rap videos.
But you're still young,
in that environment.
You're still fucking young.
I know.
Exactly. Do you know what I mean?
That's why I'm glad that I was able to do it on my own accord, but not go too far to the point where I come back and I'm a wreck and I'm fucked. I don't know what I'm doing.
Burn yourself out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the break probably done you the world of good.
No, definitely.
How's your family must be proud of you?
Yeah, definitely. And that's the best thing, being able to just take care of stuff, you know what I mean? Take care of your people. And
yeah, that's the beautiful thing in life. That's why you've got to keep pushing forward to keep succeeding. And
that helps, knowing that you can do that.
Yeah, you can take them on holiday when you feel like. And
yeah, time is the most important thing, man, because there's been times definitely where you think I've obviously gone through a phase where you think you can just pay for everything and just give people money or they want that, just give them that. But sometimes your time is more important.
Yeah, money can't buy time, and it's a precious thing to be able to enjoy life, and I think that's the fine balance.
It's the memories.
Memories you last for a lifetime, I believe, and they last forever. Some good, some bad, but I believe the bad ones make us who we are today.
Oh, definitely. I've got some bad memories that I can laugh about now. And then people have been, sometimes you say, you think you've been through some shit, and you say it to someone and you're embarrassed after they tell you what they've been through. You're like, shit, all this time I thought I'd been through something.
So the new album,
E3.
What is that? Is that a swear word?
African.
Is that?
E3 African.
So what does that mean then, E3?
E3 African. The AF is just abbreviated.
Is that?
Like back in the day, like someone saw an African, they called him AF. In my area, AF, or you had a Jamaican, a Jamo. We call it AF. Yeah.
So where's the inspiration from this album come?
A lot of it's, I made an album that's like, I produced a lot of it. So it's back to me on the beats. Like, so like the early grime shit, original old school Dizzy Rascal. That's what they're saying, old school Dizzy. They separate the two, innit? But so me making beats, but then I've got a lot of MCs on it. So it's like me back to bars basically. So everyone from
old school Dizzy.
Yeah, I know, it's mad. I'm 35, I don't see old school Dizzy. I'm just Dizzy, innit? Whatever, and they separate it. Like, you see, like, you got the Beatles fans or the Elvis fans, they've got different eras of their fans, innit? Like, I feel like I've got fans, you've got fans who like all my shit, and there's some fans who do, they don't fuck with that shit.
Yeah.
They make a point of saying, no, not that Dizzy. I have to deal with that, but yeah. But so then I've got everyone from Getz, Kano, Chip, P Money, Frisco, DWE, all them people. So you know what kind of album it's gonna be. It's bars, like back to back. So it's wicked to work with all those people.
You excited? You nervous?
Yeah, man. I'm not nervous now. Now I've got the first video out now it's done.
Is that with Chipmunk?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the stuff kind of stuff I'm more anxious about because I produced so much of it, it's just like, that bass ain't cutting through like I want it to, it's not like them old Jungle Records, man. Like, just stuff like that. I already know that we're coming, like, it's a whole new, there's so much art, there's so much new rap, new artists that I listen to. I do go on Grand Daily every day and I see what's out. So, and I listen to it, especially the young driller youths. I listen to it. So I know that there's no point, I'm not trying to compete with them necessarily. So, and I know I've got a strong, loyal fan base of people, all creeds, colors, or demographics or whatever, that just want to hear some new shit, and I've got it for them. It's a nice balance, because I've still got the upbeat shit. Like, even the track I was telling you about that was inspired by me watching your interview with...
Glenn Tamplin.
Yeah. It's a track called You Don't Know. It's like a garagey thing. Garage, what is a garage tune? I actually got the beat because I was in Switzerland one day, and when I come off the flight, a guy introduced himself to me, and his name's Decline. And then I didn't know him, but they explained to me, he made the song, I Don't Smoke the Reefer. And I was like, oh shit, sometimes people have to explain to me what tune they made, innit? I was like, okay. So then we started working, but that was like years ago. But then he gave me this beat, I had it for a while, but weren't sure about it. But then one day, I was just sitting down, I think I was in the studio at home, and I was just watching YouTube. So I just sit and just watch YouTube. And then your thing come on, I don't even know why I clicked on it. And I just watched the whole thing, and there was a part when he was talking about he was in the club, it was P. Diddy, after P. Diddy ties and that, and he was popping bottles and doing all that. And it reminded me like of when I first did all that. And I know the era he's talking about because of his age, and I know that I came directly behind that. So I still saw all of that. I saw China Whites, I saw Faces, and all them places that in my mind, I know what he's talking about. So then it reminded me, inspired me. And then part of that is in the verse that I wrote, became a big part of the tune. That it gave me the juice to add that part of it on that. So that was good.
Yeah, I fucking love that, mate. You've watched one of my podcasts and got inspiration from it.
Like, for real. Because I had the beat for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, class.
Like, that's it.
What do you think the state of like grime is now? Do you think there's a lot of good boys coming through, a lot of good artists?
As far as grime, yeah, it's not at the forefront of the charts or like mainstream right now. But I think it's been so influential even to a lot of the drill scene or even a lot of the Afro swing guys. A lot of them were grime MCs at one point.
Yeah.
And just moved on to other shit, and that's what's worked for them.
Yeah.
Like, just like I didn't know that a song with Armin van Helden would probably be my biggest song maybe. It's arguable that Bonkers is my biggest tune.
Yeah.
You try something new and that's what ends up taking off. I think that's what happened with a lot of the guys that are popping right now. I reckon a lot of them were into grime, but that's not what took them to the top.
Yeah, of course, you've got to utilise it to the advantage. Look at Stormzy and that, working with Ed Sheeran, and it opens doors, man, and I believe it's good business. It's good music, and Stamens like Bugsy Malone. What do you think of the beef in that? I know Wiley's the king of beef. Like him and
Storm. He's not the king of beef.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? He's always. What do you think about like him and Storms? Do you think that's good for grime to get more traffic towards that?
I don't even care. if I'm honest, innit?
Yeah.
I don't even care.
But, so for Dizzy Rascal, 7th album coming out, what's your plans for the future?
Another album. After this, yeah.
Greedy bastard.
Yeah, I'll keep going, man. Like I said, I'm obsessed. This is still my hobby. So I'll still learn about music. I'm still learning about music all the time. I sit and watch documentaries. I sit and like little dumb things. Like it might not be interesting to some viewers. Like, okay, I didn't know that the 909 drum kit it was invented and then it got utilized by a bunch of people in Chicago because it was cheap because it hadn't sold very well. So it was, that's why they were able to buy it so cheap in those ghettos. And a whole fucking genre was born out of that, which was house music.
Yeah.
I'm 35, I learned that this week. I knew what house music was, but I didn't know those little details. So what I'm basically saying, there's so much for me to still learn. Like, you know what I mean? Shit like that. Today, whatever, I just, in the car on the way to you, I just saw, What's that? What's the telephonic? What are they called?
Technotronic.
I just see the Pump Up the Jam video for the first time in my life. I knew
Pump
the tune.
Pump Up the Jam?
I've never seen the video before.
It's a fucking weird video. It's like acid. It's like somebody tripping balls.
See what I'm saying? But I've never seen it before.
Yeah.
Like, just little things like that. I know it sounds like I'm straying away from the point, but my point is there's so much to still learn. So I'm going to continue to keep making music because I just keep getting inspiration from all the stuff that's just out there.
Yeah. There's so much we're constantly learning. I know you're big on social media. You're massive, but you don't really interact with it.
Nah.
I think it fucks with your mind. Why is that? Why do you do that though?
I think it gets in the way, man. I think it gets in the way. It's not you don't always need to know what people got to say to you. It feels like it's not as intense in person. Like people see you, it's easy. It's like, what's going on? Yo, Dizzy, this, what's going on, brother? You cool? You want a picture? All right, cool. Sometimes you want a picture. Sometimes I don't want to take a picture for whatever reason. Whatever, 7 in the morning, I'm on the airport, I'm hungry, I ain't eating yet. Or whatever, or I'm just in a bad mood because someone pissed me off and I don't feel like taking a picture right now. I'm not being rude. It just is where, isn't
just it? Can't
but,
be asked.
But you're just rude anyway, by default. Mm-hmm. So you're a cunt then, innit?
Like, yeah.
So, but you navigate that. That's cool. The majority of the time, I'm nice to everyone and people are nice. But online, sometimes it just gets in the way, man. Like, the shit people say. Like, people look for shit to be pissed off about. And then just go mad in the comment section.
Yeah, people can be nasty bastards.
It's easy to there on the thing,
behind the screen. Yeah, so they're pussies, man. They're just fucking weaklings.
When you're outside there, what do you see? When you're driving about, what do you see? People minding their own damn business, staying the fuck out of each other's way.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the real world's like, innit?
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, stuff from that spills into the real world. It can do, innit?
Yeah.
It could cause problems. But I've definitely, especially because I've got an album coming, I've definitely obviously made more effort to be a bit more
interact a bit more. Yeah, it's business as well, isn't it?
Yeah, but don't get me wrong. There are a lot of good interactions. It's people who have been to old shows or people that remind you of stuff that you fully forgot. Like, that show or that little, like those things are there, they're gems. But sometimes you have to go through a bunch of stuff or whatever. Or people remind you of some shit that you don't even need to know about as well. Or people to do some shit that you did when you were 17. Like, and to an extent I can. Like I said, I've got songs on here, beats on here that would sound similar or the same energy as they did when I was 17, but I can't be 17 again. So
yeah, but you became successful before social media. A lot of people can be successful just by fucking releasing a video on Instagram or YouTube.
Right,
it's a weird different success. But you did that. How was your work ethic then? Was it non-stop because you never had the social media to utilize as an advantage?
There was less media. I guess it was more TV and radio then, innit? And then pirate radio was our first social media because that's what brought people together. Mm-hmm. People were listening live. But the thing is, maybe it was easier because we didn't know, there was no number. It feels like it feels like you're chasing the numbers game now. So that adds to the anxiety. Yeah. How many views? How many likes? How many, what the fuck is that? We were on radio going mad, spitting our hearts out and don't even know if 30 people were listening.
Yeah.
And it was great. And then that's what elevated us to the raves. And that's what elevated us, whatever, record labels signing us and then taking it out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All this, I feel like a lot of this shit just gets in the way unnecessarily. Yeah, but we just, you know what? I guess it's just how, whatever people felt when music videos came in. So some people that didn't want to take to it. Okay, it's a similar thing. It's just adjustment.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more about having to adjust. That's more important than me, whatever, mowing in the back. Fucking, I don't want to do that. You know what I mean? It's an adjustment.
It's what it is. And we've just got to fucking try and utilize everything to our advantage.
To be fair though, I did spaz a little bit. Those years where I was out enjoying myself, I think that's probably where I actually grew my Instagram following.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I was wilding, man. I was showing shit that I wouldn't usually show.
Yeah.
I was getting excited and I built it up, all sorts of shit that just at the time because you're out there. It's a different culture out there. There's stuff that's just a bit more acceptable out there and it's more almost mainstream culture out there than it is here. But like, if I'm in a fucking strip club, eating chicken, getting whatever massive us in front of me, mm-hmm. filming it out there in 2 a.m. It's cool, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's 8 a.m. in England.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first thing people see.
Ass and chicken.
And sometimes it's kids, yeah. And it's that thought process that yeah. like, oh shit, actually, mm-hmm. nah, you can't do that.
Yeah.
So I toned it down. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, because you're a role model as well. People are looking for you as the answers, as inspiration.
Apparently,
for
yeah. Every now and then I remind them that I ain't got the answers. You know? I'm still looking.
So for your next, you're going to try and get do a next an album straight away for next year?
I've already started.
Any big names coming on that? Can't say.
I can, man. I've got a little something with Noel Gallagher.
Oh. That'll and be MJ fucking Cole. Legendary.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm just right now it's being mixed.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's one. And the rest, I'm just experimenting. I say I bought a bunch of new keyboards, bunch of new hardware, and just experimenting. So I'm coming mm-hmm. up with stuff, yeah. writing bits, recorded a few bits. Mm-hmm. But like I said, this album ain't even out. By the time this one comes, this album.
Get you back out. On yeah, again yeah, anyway.
Yeah. Oh, come on, man.
Yeah. Of course. Before we finish up, we'll touch on a couple of things. Glastonbury headline.
Mm.
It must be happening now.
You'd think, innit?
Yeah.
You'd think, man. If we've all them festivals, man, and fucking, I put the groundwork in
yeah.
for like all mm-hmm. these MCs. Like, for really, because I was at all these festivals when they definitely had no faith in UK rappers or MCs. Like, there was definitely, there was some other UK rappers around. That was almost its own thing. It's almost like a separate thing. But as far as carrying a show to a massive crowd, like, show after show, like,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I did that from like 14, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And I've done Glastonbury so many times. And there's a couple times where I should have been the headliner, but they put me the one just before.
Yeah.
Again, because they have the faith. Or maybe whoever it is, they the same time, maybe they're thinking they're trying to sell tickets and who's mm-hmm. going to be the bigger
yeah.
draw. But it definitely, there's one year where Red Hot Chili Peppers, I think, dropped out. And they replaced him with the Gorillaz instead of putting me up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you definitely could have just like put me in that slot there. I've got this, my show is a headline show. It doesn't matter where we are
mm-hmm.
because just there's too many bangers.
Mm-hmm.
It's just too jammed with too many bangers and we give it 1,000%. Yeah. It's just a headline show. Where, like, yeah. it's just
to get the fucking crowd walking away in a high.
Yeah, that's what we do. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what it is. And every now and then, sometimes you're going to have a show that wasn't as good as you wanted it to be
yeah.
for whatever reason. But come on, man.
Yeah, it'll happen. Fucking get the fingers out.
But if it doesn't happen, so what?
Yeah.
It's like
past
anyway.
But you've still been on the main stage, but like being second last, it's like finishing. It's second
in a race.
It's
like being the second man on the moon, isn't it? Yeah. Oh yeah, I was the second man on the moon. Like, no one made a film about the second man on the moon, did they?
It will happen. It will definitely happen. Cool. Last question, brother. I know because of like coronavirus and all this shit.
Yeah.
For all like festivals and stuff, you're still doing a lot of headlining stuff, but it's drive through, is it?
No, that one got cancelled as well. Yeah. It just went on Piers Morgan for no reason. Good Morning Britain.
Did it? Yeah, it got cancelled. So, do you think everything will be back next year then, where people can enjoy a concert, or do you think musicians
I honestly
can struggle?
Don't know, man. Hopefully you can, innit? But I don't know how you're going to have a festival with, say 80,000 people, or even one of the smaller ones, 30,000 people, 2 metres apart?
Yeah. Good and luck. 1,000 fucking people there.
Yeah, yeah. Like, or 30,000 people yeah, there. Yeah. So like, okay, how's that going to work, innit?
Yeah.
Like, and then mm-hmm. almost like, I wouldn't want to have to go through all those things, like go through like a bunch of testing before I go to a festival to get, I don't know.
Yeah, hopefully things can move forward. But Dizzy, for coming on today, brother, and telling your story, it's been unbelievable. I very much appreciate it. For just finishing up, mate, anybody watching, just looking for a wee bit of inspiration, just want to start off in the rap scene, what advice would you have for them?
What advice would I...
Don't do it.
Definitely do it. Definitely do it. It's not always going to go your way.
Mm-hmm.
And just, if you really want it, just don't do anything else. That's what I did. I dropped out of college because I made up my mind, like, why am I here? I could mm-hmm. be doing this outside. And within that year, that's when I got the record deal.
Yeah.
So like I said, it's not always going to be easy though. I don't want to tell anyone to drop out of college and that. Yeah. Just stick at it, because one thing I've learned, anything can happen, man. Some of these guys that you see and popping right now, they're always smashing it. They've been in the game a while. They look new. their success is new, but they're not new. They just stuck at it.
Yeah. Brother.
Yes, sir.
Congratulations on the new album coming out. I look forward to hearing it.
Yeah, man.
And have a great day.
Yes, you too.
You can also watch my podcast on my YouTube channel. The link is in the bio if you'd like to subscribe. You can follow me on my social media platforms to see who my next guest is. Follow me on Facebook at JamesEnglish11, Twitter, JamesEnglish0, Instagram, JamesEnglish2. You can also download these podcasts on iTunes or Spotify.